It's easy to blame others when your ideas are not executed. Ideas without execution are just dreams. Do you and your team members have the IQ? I'm not talking about intelligence. I'm talking about your innovation quotient. So does you and your team have the IQ to take your ideas and see them result in killer innovations? I'll be right back.
This is the Killer Innovations Podcast with Phil McKinney. Keep in mind that the information and opinions expressed in this podcast are Phil's and Phil's alone, and they don't necessarily reflect those of his past, current, or future employers. Now, here's Phil McKinney.
If you are a regular listener, you know that the podcast in the past has focused on things like creativity as a skill, organizational culture that encourages innovation, methodologies, tools, and tricks to generate better ideas. But innovation is about taking ideas and turning them into a reality. It isn't about just creating ideas and putting them in a notebook and sticking them on the shelf. You need the tools and skills and just the core capabilities to translate those ideas into real products and services. Now, it's easy to blame your organization, your company, your nonprofit organization, your manager, the overall management team, the board of directors, whoever, for not listening, for not getting it, for not understanding the role of innovation or understanding the value of your idea. In my experience, the best innovators don't make excuses. They just deliver. Do you have what it takes? Do you have what it takes to take an idea and just get it delivered, get it executed, get it out there, and prove the value? How do you compare against others in your innovation quotient? Now, what I mean by innovation quotient is I've gone out and created just a series of questions. Now, I'm going to ask you to answer these questions, and then based on the score, give you a little bit of a hint on, one, where do you rank, and then two, areas that you can improve. So, if you're ready, I'm going to ask you a series of questions, keep track of your score. At the end, I'll give you the answers, and then give you the key to understanding where you rank in your innovation quotient. So, here we go. First question. Which of the following can you honestly say is a true statement about yourself? Which of the following can you honestly say is a true statement about yourself? Now check all that apply. Answer A. I know the colors of all of my friends' eyes. B. I am comfortable with ambiguity. C. I know what all the options on my iPod are for. And D, I often change the options on my iPod and can tell the difference. So again, which of the following can you honestly say is a true statement about yourself? Check all that apply. A, I know the colors of all my friends' eyes. B, I am comfortable with ambiguity. C, I know what all the options on my iPod are for. And D, I often change the options on my iPod and can tell the difference. Question 2. True or false? I routinely solicit, listen to, and act upon feedback from a wide range of people, not just my friends, family, or direct coworkers. Again, true or false, I routinely solicit, listen to, and act upon feedback from a wide range of people, not just friends, family, or direct coworkers. Question number 3. Every day you take a walk outdoors, you carry with you a notebook and pencil. After a month, your notebook is mostly filled with A, thoughts and opinions, B, several to-do lists, C, drawings and doodles, or D, phone numbers and email addresses. So again, question 3. Every day you take a walk outdoors, you carry with you a notebook and a pencil. After a month, your notebook is mostly filled with A, thoughts and opinions, B, several to-do lists, C, drawings and doodles, or D, phone numbers and email addresses. Question 4. The following are 4 statements. Rank each depending on how true the statement is about you. 4 means generally true, 1 means generally false. A. In conversation, I frequently use the words totally, always, must, never, and absolutely. B. I frequently end conversations with an unanswered question. C. I frequently use the words maybe, perhaps, depends, sometimes, and relatively. And D, I frequently end conversations with a definitive statement. So again, question 4. The following are 4 statements. Rank each depending on how true the statement is about you. 4 means generally true. 1 means generally false. A, in conversation, I frequently use words totally, always, must, never, and absolutely. B, I frequently end conversations with an unanswered question. C, I frequently use the words maybe, perhaps, depends, sometimes, and relatively. D, I frequently end conversations with a definitive statement. Question number 5. To help get money for a project, I should A, consult with my boss and follow the official procedure. B, ask my boss, then if I don't get an outright no, work my connections to make it happen. Again, question number 5. To help get money for a project, I should A, consult with my boss and follow the official procedure, or B, ask my boss, then if I don't get an outright no, work my connections to make it happen. Question number 6. True or false for the following 4 statements. A. In 1993, 2 executives from Rubbermaid toured an exhibit of Egyptian antiquities at the British Museum in London. They came away with 11 specific ideas, including some derived from the Pharaoh's kitchen utensils. B. A 3M employee came up with the idea for post-it notes after using bits of paper to mark the hymns he sang in church. C. The first woman known to become a millionaire from one of her inventions was African-American named Madam C.J. Walker. She invented hair straightener in 1905. And D. The actress Hedda Lamarr, an innovator of on-screen nudity, received a patent in 1942 for helping to invent the radio-controlled torpedo. So again, question 6, true or false for each of the following 4 statements. In 1993, 2 executives from Rubbermaid toured an exhibit of Egyptian antiquities at the British Museum. They came away with 11 specific ideas, including some derived from the Pharaoh's kitchen utensils. B, a 3M employee came up with the idea for post-it notes after using bits of paper to mark the hymns he sang in church. C. The first woman known to become a millionaire from one of her inventions was African-American named Madam C.J. Walker. She created a hair straightener in 1905. D, actress Hedda Lemire, an innovator of on-screen nudity, received a patent in 1942 for helping to invent the radio-controlled torpedo. So what are the correct answers? Question 1. Which of the following can you honestly say is a true statement about yourself? Remember, check all that apply. I know the colors of all my friends' eyes. B. I am comfortable with ambiguity. C. I know what all the options on my iPod are for. And D. I often change the options on my iPod and can tell the difference. So what was the correct answer? The correct answer is actually all of them. So give yourself 1 point that you marked as true for each of those 4 statements. So if you answered all 4 of them true, give yourself 4 points. Now, why are this important? The color of the eyes is not so much about knowing color of eyes, but your ability to observe details. It's not about just being superficial in your observations, but being able to pick out details in the observations so that you can recall them and use them later for generating of ideas. B, about ambiguity. The whole concept of innovation is about ambiguity. It's not about knowing the exact answer. You're never going to know exactly what the outcome is going to be from an idea that you're working on. But you can't let ambiguity be fearful or scare you away. You need to work through that ambiguity to get to the end result. And C and D with regards to the iPod, it's not specific to the iPod. It's really about just understanding and having that curiosity to not just use the superficial features, but to actually understand whatever it's a product or a service or a brand that you're involved in, but being able to get beyond it and actually understand all of those capabilities and how you can use it. So again, for question 1, give yourself 1 point for each of those 4 statements that you answered as true. Number 2, true or false. I routinely solicit, listen to, and act upon feedback from a wide range of people, not just friends, family, or direct coworkers. Now, if you've scored this as true, give yourself 2 points. It's important that you be able to be comfortable in soliciting ideas from a wide range of people, in some cases, even strangers. Don't fool yourself into thinking that by getting feedback from your direct coworkers or friends and family that is an honest answer around your idea. Diversity is the key here. Get as much feedback, listen to it carefully, and then be willing to act upon it. So if you answered yourself true to question number 2, give yourself 2 points. Now question number 3. Every day you take a walk outdoors, you carry with you a notebook and a pencil. After a month, your notebook is mostly filled with A, thoughts and opinions, B, several to-do lists, C, drawings and doodles, and D, phone numbers and email addresses. Now, what's the correct answer? Well, in my opinion, the correct answer is C. If you answered C, give yourself 2 points. Now, A, thoughts and opinions, they're important, but they're more about what you're thinking about internal to your own mind, things that are important to you. B, to-do list. Now, to-do lists are important, but they're not as impactful to being able to generate ideas and translate those into innovations. C, drawings and doodles. Now, the assumption here is these drawings and doodles are about what you're seeing out in the real world. It's about your ability to improve your observation skills and your ability to document those and see where they lead you for new ideas and new innovations. And D, phone numbers and email addresses. If you're walking around outdoors and you're busy writing down phone numbers and email addresses, you need to get a life. Question number 4. Below are 4 statements. Rank each depending on how true the statement is about you. 4 means generally true, 1 means generally false. A, in conversations, I frequently use the words totally, always, must, never, and absolutely. B, I frequently end conversations with an unanswered question. C, I frequently use the words maybe, perhaps, depends, sometimes, and relatively. And D, I frequently end conversations with a definitive statement. Now, in this case, for question number 4, the correct answers are B and C. Now, if you've answered B and C, add the ranking that you gave them and divide it by 2. So if you gave yourself a number 4 on B and a number 3 on C, it's a total of 7. Divided by 2, you get yourself 3.5 points. Now, why B and C? Well, let me talk through each one of these in order. A, if you find yourself or you find someone frequently using the words totally, always, must, never, and absolutely, that sends a signal to the organization, other coworkers, that you are very black and white in your thinking. You've already made up your mind. You already know what the answer is. And there's no opportunity for you to have any kind of interaction that could persuade you to have a different view or a different perspective. It's what we would refer to as a very closed type of conversation mode. B, I frequently end conversations with an unanswered question. Now, if you're a regular listener of this podcast, you know the importance of asking the right question. You should always end a conversation with an unanswered question. Leave them thinking. Give them a question that will force the person on the other end to go off and think about the question. Keep in mind that by asking the really, really good, insightful, intelligent questions leaves a phenomenal impression on the people. C, I frequently use the words maybe, perhaps, depends, sometimes, and relatively. This is the kind of conversation style you want to have. You want to be open. You want to talk about possibilities. Now, you don't want to use this as a way to get out of making a decision, but when you're having conversations, rather than locking into a final answer, you want to have an open conversation style. And D, I frequently end conversations with a definitive statement. Now, in some cases, you will end conversations in a definitive statement when you're making a decision. But in most conversations, you don't want to leave the conversation on an abrupt end. You want to leave the opportunity to have an ongoing conversation around the topic. Ask a question. Avoid giving a definitive statement. So in this case, the best answer, in my opinion, is B and C. Add the scores that you use to rank them as being either generally true or generally false. Divide the ranking for B and C by 2, and that's the number of points you get for that question. Number 5. To help get money for a project, I should A, consult with my boss and follow the official procedure, or B, ask my boss, then if I don't get an outright no, work my connections to make it happen. The correct answer here is B. Now, if you answer A, you're going to be one of those people that's constantly complaining about management's inability to execute on your idea. You need to take ownership for your idea and find a way to get it done. So if you ask your boss and they don't get an outright no, work your connections to make it happen. This is the sign of a champion. This is a sign of an innovator who can take an idea and see it through and see it executed. This is what management teams are looking for, are those people that can just simply get the execution done. So again, if you answered yourself question B, give yourself 2 points. Question 6, answer true or false to the following 4 statements. In 1993, 2 executives from Rubbermaid toured an exhibit of Egyptian antiquities at the British Museum. They came away with 11 specific ideas, including some derived from Pharaoh's kitchen utensils. B, a 3M employee came up with the idea for post-it notes after using bits of paper to mark the hymns he sang in church. C, the first woman known to become a millionaire from one of her inventions was African-American named Madam C.J. Walker. She created a hair straightener in 1905. And D, the actress Hedy Lamarr, an innovator of on-screen nudity, received a patent in 1942 for helping to invent the radio-controlled torpedo. Now remember, true or false for any of these 4. Give yourself 1 point for every one of these that you marked as true. All four of these statements of fact are true and should give you some hint to the variety of ideas and opportunities to go and source ideas from. It isn't simply about becoming, you know, your own ideas, but to go build upon ideas that come from others. And it's also not about who you are, where you live in the world. Anybody can come up with an idea that can lead to financial and personal success. So give yourself 1 point for every one of the true answers in question number 6. So again, for question number 1, 1 point for each of those questions, which gives you, if you've answered them correctly, gives you 4 points. Question number 2 is true. Give yourself 2 points. Question number 3, the answer was C. Give yourself 2 points. Question number 4, add up the rankings that you have for answer B and answer C, divide them by 2, that equals your total number of points, which means the maximum number of points is 3.5 points. Question number 5, the answer is B. Give yourself 2 points. And question number 6, all of them are true. Give you 1 point for each, which is a total of 4 points. So what's the key? If your total is more than 14 points, I would classify you as a master innovator, or what I would call a champion. If you scored between 10 and 14 points, you're almost there and you're moving up. You clearly are an innovative leader within your organization. There's still room to grow, but you're clearly moving up. If you're between 5 and 10, need to work on it. Need to work on the skill sets where you are weak in order to prove your innovation quotient. And if you're less than 5, whoa, you're way down the list. Lots of work to do, but it's not out of the question. Now, the key thing to keep in mind when I talk about this innovation quotient is your score is not the final answer. You can actually improve your score. The key here to improving is understanding what skills you need to work on. So the skills that the innovation quotient reveals are things like observation. So the question about eye color is about your observation skills. Do you naturally have a good observation skill set, or is this an area you need to work on? The second one is about collaboration. So if you're not getting feedback from a diverse set of groups and your feedback is coming from a very small set of people, then you're weak in your collaboration skills. You need to broaden your ability to collaborate. The next is capturing. You need to be able to capture your ideas. You need to be able to capture your observation. Whether that's in a notebook or using a video camera, using a digital camera that you carry with you, you need to constantly be capturing things that are going to help you generate ideas and turn those into innovations. Next is how inquisitive are you? What kind of communication style? Are you using words like always and never? Or are you more open about maybe and other types of word styles? Are you talking in the form of questions, or are you making definitive statements? You want to be inquisitive and you want to be open to possibilities. Next it's about get it done. Just get it done. If it's about asking your boss and following the official procedure, or is it about asking your boss, and if you don't get that definitive no, go figure it out. Go figure out a way to get it done. In the case of innovation, you are a change agent within your organization. Your management teams are looking for you to go out there and get it done and show the organization how to get it done. And last but not least, building on the ideas of others. As I've said many times, it's very rare that someone comes up with a truly new idea. There's always some form of a catalyst, and there's always some form of somebody who's come before an idea that you're building upon. And so going through and looking at the history, in this case, of everything from Rubbermaid to 3M, it is about those pioneers who have shown their innovation quotient and looking at how they do it and learning from them. Now, remember, again, it is not your final score. It's all about how do you take those ideas and drive the execution? How do you take ideas that lead to innovations? And if you work on improving your innovation quotient, you will be delivering those killer innovations. Now, this week's killer question, we're going to take a little different approach. I'm going to be actually answering a few listener questions. Now, in this case, these are questions that have come from multiple listeners, but I'm just going to answer them because I think they're generic to most of the listeners for you on the podcast. First off comes from Steve. Now, he asks about why I've never mentioned the PDMA, or the Product Development Management Association. He goes on to say, there appears to be some good info there, but it's process-oriented and dull. Do you see value in producing the network? Now, generally, I don't like to endorse. As you notice in the podcast, I don't talk about specific companies other than to use them as representative terms. I don't endorse innovation products or innovation consultants. I generally don't like to endorse. Now, however, with PDMA, I do like their work. They have phenomenal research and process. And the benchmark that they do of companies that belong to the PDMA is second to none. If you want to know how your processes and outputs, meaning how many ideas get translated into innovations, how many innovations generate certain revenue and certain margin contributions, the PDMA benchmark is excellent. And so I would encourage you to look at things like PDMA or other types of innovation organizations that go out and actually do these kinds of benchmarks that allow you to look and see what are those best practices that are out there. Now, I've said in previous podcasts that I'm not a big fan of best practices, because if all you do is copy somebody else's process, all you're going to do is make yourself like your competition. So the key here is to look across everybody that's reporting, everybody that's working on innovation programs, and take the best of each and create your own innovation process that's ultimately going to lead to you having a clear competitive advantage in the market. Now, in the case of the PDMA, I actually have people on my team who participate in PDMA, who attend their conferences, and we utilize their information. So generally, Steve, in answering your question, and hopefully I'm answering questions from other listeners, with regards to the PDMA, I would encourage you to participate, but I would also encourage you to look at other organizations that are also focused on how do you improve the overall innovation process, the innovation skills, the creativity skills of your teams in order to generate better products and to have better impact on your overall business. Now, a second question comes from Bernardo in Brazil. Now, he makes a statement that he's found it very difficult to come up with wild or disruptive ideas, especially because they're looking for new services and not tangible products. Now, I've tried to tailor the podcast to be such that it's not specific to a product, but that all of the tools and tricks can be applied to both products and services. Now, in the case of services, the risk you run is in many cases, service ideas can be very quickly copied. It becomes harder and harder to really create a killer innovation around services, because remember, one of the criteria for a killer innovation is really around the fact that you can create something that's hard for somebody else to copy. Now, in the case of services, just by their nature, they tend to be very easily copied. Now, there are some great examples of services that result in a phenomenal competitive advantage and were also very hard to copy. Now, how are these done? The one key area here is to use unique capabilities to create the barrier. Take advantage of something that you have. Don't think about everything that you have today as being a negative or a boat anchor. You can actually turn a negative into a positive, whether that's the geography you're currently reaching, whether it's your infrastructure, your IT systems, current customers. Find something that you can create the service around that's going to create a distinctive advantage. Now, the one example I'm going to use here is a U.S. example, and it's MCI's friends and family. Now, as we know, MCI is no longer around, but for those of us in the U.S. who recall the friends and family, it was a phenomenal success. Now, the way friends and family worked for MCI long distance telephone was the fact that you told MCI the list of all of your friends and family members. You got those friends and family to come on to MCI and you could talk to them at a reduced rate. Now, in today's case, a lot of telephone companies, whether it be wireless or traditional phone companies, are offering these kinds of capabilities today. But back in the mid-90s, this was new. It was absolutely unheard of. And what it was is MCI figured out a way, given the constraints within their billing system, to actually utilize this, and it made it easier for them because they could actually rate or bill fewer calls. If you were calling your friends and family, they didn't have to worry about it. So it actually reduced their overall processing time. What created the unique advantage was that their competitors didn't have the same capabilities. In many cases, it took upwards of 2 to 3 years for their competitors to be able to come up and be able to come up with something that was comparable. Nowadays, it's a fairly common service. But in that case, MCI created a unique competitive advantage. It allowed actually to use their customers as a marketing engine to get their friends and families to convert to MCI. The result is that they dominated that market and had phenomenal success during those years. So again, the key here is, you know, yes, it is hard to come up with wild, disruptive ideas around services. It has been done. It can be done. If you want to create a truly a killer innovation around a service, you need to take advantage of some unique capabilities to create a barrier, whether that's geography, infrastructure, current customers, brand, whatever. But you need to not give up. Don't discount services just because it's hard. Innovation by itself is hard. But don't discount your ability to create a killer innovation just because it's hard. Now, Bernardo goes on to ask a follow-up question, and this is probably the most common question I get, is how do you manage to have a podcast among everything else you do, both professionally and personally? Well, the podcast does take a phenomenal amount of time. Just to kind of put it in context for you, for every week of the podcast, it takes me roughly 8 to 10 hours of research, writing, recording, editing, posting the show notes, getting the audio up on the servers, updating the RSS feed. So it's about 8 to 10 hours out of my personal time. I don't do this in relation to my day-to-day job. You notice that I don't talk about my day-to-day employer. I do this purely out of my passion to mentor, to share the knowledge and skills that others have transferred to me and who've mentored me. It's my way of paying it forward. Fortunately, my family is extremely supportive of the podcast, albeit my oldest daughter, who's now married. My son-in-law is a regular listener, and he likes to listen to it in the car. However, if my daughter's in the car, she makes him turn it off because she cannot contemplate hearing her father's voice coming out of the iPod through the radio in the car. So, albeit my family is very supportive, I think my three children are probably not regular listeners of the podcast because they probably have more than tired of listening to my voice of all the years of growing up. So, yes, it does take a lot of time. For me, it's a personal passion. I hope it's beneficial for you. Given the feedback and the support that you guys have given me, that's what feeds me to do this. I've also learned a lot. It's forced me to take things that have been in my head, get them down onto paper, and structure them in such a way that I can put them into a podcast. So the podcast is actually, I've got a lot of benefit out of it by just the forcing factor of me documenting all the tools and tricks and approaches that I've done over the years and putting them in such a way that I can share them with you via the podcast. In closing, thanks for listening. Please send your feedback and questions. If I continue to get questions, I'll start putting those into the podcast. Please email them to me at podcast@killerinnovations.com. You can also post your comments at the Killer Innovations website at killerinnovations.com, or you can participate in the conversation over in Facebook. Feel free to also link up with me. If you are a member of LinkedIn, you can send me an invite and I will reply. If you also want to be classified as a friend in Facebook, you can also do it that way. Please, please note that you are a listener of the podcast. I will typically decline unless you let me know that you're a member of the podcast, because otherwise I just get hundreds of these invites and I tend to decline 99% of them. So please identify yourself as a member of the podcast and send me an invite via LinkedIn or Facebook and I'll accept. Also, don't forget to vote or post comments about the podcast. It's the easiest way to say thanks for the producers of your favorite podcast, not just Killer Innovations, but all the podcasts you listen to. So go ahead, go out to dig.com, Podcast Alley, iTunes, post comments about the show, vote for the show. It lets other listeners know what shows you are listening to and which ones you find of value. Also, tell others. Spread the word that creativity and innovation are the new skills to have, and spread the word about the Killer Innovations podcast. Again, thanks for listening to my rambling. I'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye.